Good morning, First Baptist Church. Happy Easter. It's good to be with you. It's good to be together, whether it's through a screen or not, where we are joined together through Christ and the risen Christ, which is why we celebrate this morning. You know, Easter is a time of coming together. It's a time where generally we would gather with our families, gather with one another. We would celebrate. We would sing songs. We would think about the Lord's sacrifice in our lives. But I know that that's not the way that it's going to be going this year. And it feels different. It feels strange somehow. I think about, you know, Easter supper, not being able to share that with friends and family. And not being able to sit together at church and to talk about what God has done, what He's doing. But in one regard, I think it gives us a bit more of an understanding, a little bit more of a perspective of what it means to be followers of Christ and what it means to actually celebrate this day if we were to think about it 2,000 years ago. You know, we don't get the opportunity to join together. We aren't going to have the opportunity to worship together as we normally do. And I know for a lot of us, these last weeks and months have been full of struggle. As I've talked to you on the phone and we've connected, and I've shared and you've shared, we know that there's times where we've just been feeling overwhelmed. And I want you to know that though we can't be together physically, we are together. We come together under the banner of the risen Christ, which is what we celebrate today. For those of you who know me well, I'm kind of two parts. I have an extrovert part where I just love gatherings. I love to get together. I love those big celebrations. Easter is one of my favorite times of year. I love to have family, friends, sit around the table and just enjoy a good meal and conversation and things like that. But I also have another part where I'm part introvert, where, you know, I need to get away. I love the quiet. I love the silence. I love places like this where, you know, you can come and just enjoy the sounds of the wind blowing through the trees and those sorts of things. But it's been a struggle, I'll admit, for me as well. As we've thought about Easter, as we step into Easter now my worlds of extrovert are being taken away, but also that introvert is as well. I struggle in that area as well. Sometimes I just feel overwhelmed, wondering, you know, how to respond to the things that we're feeling and to the time that we're in. I imagine you found yourself maybe in a similar situation. And I know you have, as I've talked to some of you, we've been cooped up in the house. We've been stuck in isolation, and kids go a little crazy. And sometimes husbands and wives, we go a little crazy, and relationships become hard and difficult. And I want you to know that we are still together, though we can't be physically together. You know, perhaps this current crisis has caught you off guard and you're struggling with those sorts of things. You're feeling overwhelmed, but perhaps it goes deeper than that. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed because of things that have happened even farther back, before this was even an issue or a thing we were dealing with. Maybe a relationship gone bad. Maybe struggling financially. Maybe struggling with your spouse or your children or children for you, struggling with your parents, you know, who just don't seem to listen to your wisdom, right? Maybe there's a number of things that are making you feel overwhelmed in this season. You know, I want to invite you into a time right now as we are going to take a look at one man's life who answers some of these questions for us, who walks with us through some of these struggles. And as we'll find out, as he meets the risen Christ, how we as a people can also be brought up out of that miry clay, that clay that sucks us down, that when life sucks us down. You know, if you're feeling overwhelmed, maybe there's something that's made you feel that way. And you don't even want to think about it. To think about it just makes you sick to your very stomach. Well, let's walk with that now as we go into the scriptures. You know, the Bible teaches us that when we are overwhelmed, Christ is the one who overcame. In other words, when we are struggling with our lives, difficulties, and when we feel like the world is just pouring down on us and we can't get away from it, Christ has overcome. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, for those of you struggling right now, you're looking at me and you're like, yeah, okay, that sounds really good, James. We love that. Except for I'm dealing with, you know, sickness, or I'm dealing with losing my job, or I'm dealing with fear and anxiety or depression that comes out of a bad place. I'm dealing with a relationship that's struggling that I have to figure out what to do with. And that sounds really good. It really sounds good. But how is that going to affect my day? Do I just say it and walk off and you know, have to pick the pieces up anyway? How do we deal with it? Well, we're going to look at an Easter story. And I, it's not just going to be the regular Easter story. It's not about Mary going to the burial site, finding it empty and Jesus gone or any of those things. I want to look at the life of Peter just briefly. Because there's a guy who, you know, I believe went to the ends of the earth to follow Jesus and found himself in some pretty bad, some pretty rough, some pretty dark and deep and dark places. And you know, there's no doubt that Peter had devotion to Jesus. From the very moment that they connected, that they met, he dropped what he had, he followed him. He worked very hard to please Jesus, to do the things, say the things, say the right things that he thought Jesus would like. You know, to do what needed to be done. You know, if there's something that had to go on, he was the first to stand up and do it. He was just devoted to Jesus, loved Jesus, followed him, did what he needed to do. You know, there even comes that time as at the final supper when Jesus has all the disciples sitting around and he starts to tell them and predict his death and says, these are the things that are going to go on and this is what's going to happen. And there's that declaration from Peter, you know, as he stands up, he says, doesn't matter who else in this room falls away from you, Jesus. Everybody can fall away from you. I will never fall away from you. Peter makes that declaration and you know, they're all sitting around the table. And if you read it in John, there's a point where Jesus is just, you know, he's laying out all this last minute teaching. He knows his time's short and he's telling them all these things that go on. And then Jesus makes a declaration of his own. He says in chapter 16, verse 33, he says, I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world, you will have tribulation. You'll have trouble. You'll have things that overwhelm you. But take heart. I have overcome the world. So Peter makes his declaration. All the disciples are there. Everybody hears this. And they kind of get up, and then life goes on. You know the story. As Judas goes out and he betrays Jesus, and the betrayers show up, they pick up Jesus at the Garden of Gethsemane, and the disciples make a first-ditch effort to kind of fight them off, and Jesus stops them, and he gets taken away. And that devoted Peter, you know, the guy who just loves Jesus so much, he begins following. He's following at a distance. And you can just see the internal struggle that's going on within him. He doesn't know what's happening. He doesn't want his friend to suffer to be taken like this. But he knows what's probably going to happen. And he follows at a distance. And the first person he comes to says, hey, I know you. Weren't you with Jesus? No, I wasn't with Jesus. First compromise of his faith, of his declaration. And then again, a little while later, another person comes up to him. Says, hey, you were with Jesus. Weren't you one of those guys following? No, again. Second compromise becomes easier until the third compromise comes around is from a middle school girl, a 10-year-old girl who just says, you know, didn't I see you with Jesus? He begins to curse and swear, no, I would never be with that Jesus. And at that moment, the rooster crows, which Jesus said was going to happen. And that devotion, all that devotion, all that brave declaration, all that following with Christ, summed up in three denials. And says Peter turned and he just ran off and he wept. He wept bitterly. Heartbroken. A man broken. Relationship broken. Overwhelmed by the fact that he couldn't live up to what he had distinctly said in front of all of his peers, in front of Jesus himself. And he failed. And he was broken. He had lied about his relationship with Jesus to save his own life, despite the fact that hours earlier, as brave could be, he stood up and said, "I will never leave you. I will never walk away from you. I will die with you if I have to." Peter's deception of his own heart, his deception in front of all of his peers, his deception in front of Christ, became so overwhelming that it broke him. And so as the story goes on, Christ goes to the cross where he's crucified and he's dead. And they take him down and they bury him. So Peter deceives himself, he deceives Jesus, he deceives his followers. And then there's that morning, Easter morning, the morning we gather to celebrate, when the two ladies come down to the tomb and they find it empty. And they're overwhelmed. They don't know, where's Jesus? Someone's taken his body. What's happening? And then they go back and they run and they tell the disciples. The disciples come. Peter and John come. And John, who's a little bit more in shape, gets there a little quicker. And then Peter arrives. You know, I wonder what's going on in his heart as he sees the empty tomb. You know, he's been spending the weekend struggling with the thoughts that have been going on in his head about what he's said, what he's done. I'm sure it's overwhelming for him to think about. I'm sure that first time that he walked away and wept bitterly was not the last time that weekend. But then some good news begins to come up. People are starting to see him. He's starting to appear. He appears to two men on a road, and he appears to the ladies. And then finally he appears to the disciples. Peter, one of them. But there's no conversation. There's nothing we're told about it. And so after a couple times appearing, and we don't really know what was said, what was done. You know, we know that he talked to Thomas and he showed Thomas, who was doubting, the marks. But we don't know too much more about what was said. And then it says after a few days, Peter's standing there and he says to those around him, he says, "You know what?" He says, "I'm going fishing." Right at the start of John chapter 21. What a statement. "I'm going fishing." Now, I can understand that. I love fishing. I'm a fisherman. And we don't really know why Peter decided to do that. But I suspect that, you know, these thoughts, the conversation that it was held with the disciples and with Jesus, his declaration, and then his deception where he lied and he lied to the three people. He rejected Jesus three times. We're playing through his mind. And, you know, he just had to get back to something that was a firm foundation. He had to get out to something he recognized, something that he knew. And so he goes, "I'm going fishing." And with good friends that he has, they say, "You know what? We're going with you." And they pack up their stuff, they pack up their boat, and they head out to the lake. And it says they're out there all night. And they're toiling away, and they're fishing all night. As they, you know, the morning starts to dawn, they haven't caught a thing. And they start to come back into shore. And on shore, they see there's a fire. They see there's a man standing there. And he says to them, "Friends, do you have any breakfast? Have you caught anything?" Which is a great question to ask fishermen who come back empty-handed. We love that question. Of course, they said, "No, we have nothing." And they're still out in the boat. They're still there. And Jesus says, "Cast your net on the other side, and you will have something." And of course they do. And instantly the memories come back as they've done this before. This is not new to them. As Jesus has done this and said this before to them, and they instantly recognize him. And Peter jumps out of the boat, he grabs his cloak, he jumps out of the boat, and he's prone to these things. But I think he sees and he recognizes opportunity. He's ready to deal with the overwhelming guilt, the overwhelming shame that he's feeling. And he runs to shore and Jesus is there and Jesus is already making breakfast. He doesn't need the fish that that they caught. He's making bread. He's making fish. He says, "Sit down and eat." You know, there's something to that story that Jesus does not leave these things undealt with in our lives. And as you go on to read that chapter, he takes Peter aside and he deals with him one rejection at a time, and he restores him to life. And I wonder if those words came back to Peter, as each time, you know, do you love me? Of course I love you. Feed my sheep, feed my lambs, take care of them. He gives him purpose, he gives him direction. He delivers him from that overwhelming sense that the guilt and shame has laid on him. And I wonder if those words ever came back to Peter during that time in 1633. You will have trouble. You will have much trouble in this world. But I have overcome the world. And in that moment, he had overcome. He had risen from the grave. For what he couldn't do before, now he has done. And he's done it not only in Peter's life, but he's done it in our lives as well. So you know, the next time that you're brought to a place of being overwhelmed, or where you're feeling like you've been hamstrung by the weight of the world, life just becomes more than you can bear. You know, it's the story of the post-resurrection, where Jesus raises from the grave. He meets with those he needs to meet with. He meets with you, and he meets with me. And he takes away that guilt, that guilt that we have, that shame that we have. And he replaces it with joy. It's within the stories that we read of Peter's life, of Paul's life, of the other disciples who follow, who believe in Jesus because they saw what he did, they saw what he became, they saw him rise from the grave, and that he had the power to forgive sins and to restore people and to deliver people. He did all those things, and he did them for you and for me so that we can have freedom. You know, as we believe that, as we think about that, as we remind ourselves of that story, we become freer. That weight gets just a little bit less on us. We are able to cope where we couldn't cope with before, because we know that no matter what you do, you don't do it alone. Christ walks with you. He is for you. He has overcome for you and for me. I want you to imagine what our lives would be like if we believe that with all of our heart. Every situation we stepped into, we realize and recognize that Christ has overcome, that he has given us what we need to be overcomers, and that he loves us, and that no matter what struggle we have, no matter what the world throws at us, he walks with us and he gives us the ability to overcome. How would we then live if we knew that? How then would we respond to the overwhelming weights that the world throws at us? If no matter what was thrown at us, Christ deflected, Christ took, Christ stood in the way of, Christ took for us, what would we do? I want you to remember that verse as you celebrate Easter, maybe a little bit differently this year, as you struggle, as you wrestle, I want you to struggle and wrestle with the thought that you will have trouble, yes, but Christ has overcome, and that we can overcome as well. May God bless you. Happy Easter. I pray that the joy of the Lord will just fill you fuller than you ever could imagine this week and this weekend. God bless. Amen.